My name is Albert Schoonover, originally from Hoonah, from the Thlunaknagi Coho tribe. My father is Ken Schoonover from Hoonah. My mother is Sharon Wright Brown from Sitka in Hoonah, and I currently live in Juneau. I enlisted in the Air Force in 1986, August, and I generally went to Anchorage to join a military service. I didn't have a preference to be an electronics guy, and how it all just panned out, I ended up getting jet engine maintenance with the Air Force, and that wasn't how I planned to go in, but it just kind of happened with the recruiters there at the time. I was living in Hoonah, and then I went up to Anchorage to, when I decided to go in the military, I just up and went to Anchorage. My dad was in the Army. He was a cryptographer, and he always just said, it's a good retirement. I wish I would have stayed, because then I would have, you know, like you could get your pension and all that. And he had a lot of stories about it and kind of built up the, it's an honorable thing to do. It's a good thing to do, you know. When I kind of wasn't sure what I wanted to do in college, I decided just to join the military. 1987, like January 27th, I landed at Lackland in basic training. And that was a big, I was 19, and coming from Hoonah was a big jump to all of a sudden be heading south to go into the military, and you get off the bus and it definitely had people there greeting to yell at you. It wasn't easy. Oh, a shock, scared. Then I couldn't get a hold of anybody in Hoonah or my mom or dad. I couldn't call, and nobody would have picked their phone up. So I went through about a month of just getting through it till I finally got a hold of somebody. So it was definitely a shock, get thrown out into the world. Luckily, I was good at polishing boots, and then that took a lot of, I just figured out how to get a really mirror shine on black boots back then, and I would just have probably 20 pairs of boots in front of me the whole day, and I would just polish where everybody else would take care of my bed and took care of my locker, where I just would do boots the whole day. And that kind of was one of the things that helped me get through basic, was that having that skill. I could put a mirror shine on them, and I probably haven't polished any since, but that helped me get through basic. Names are starting to get fuzzy, but there's definitely good cop, bad cop type of scenario. Had a younger guy that was a lot of fun and felt like he's taking care of you. Then we had one that was just mean, and you just didn't want to see him. And so it was a relief when he wasn't there. I think I blocked his name out. When I went down, I had wrestled in high school, and I immediately met a guy from Denver who was a kung fu wrestler. He was a martial artist from four different styles. We immediately became friends, and because I wrestled and did a little bit of boxing, that we hit it off really fast. He was a black guy and I was Native, and just that broke our barrier down right away, and we were just became friends. You're just scrambling to kind of make it through the everyday. You know, you're just following orders, and it didn't really become an obstacle, but it definitely helped break barriers with other people that you could connect with and say, hey, I'm Native from Alaska. Whoa, you know, and there's other guys that, yeah, my grandma was part Cherokee and all this on and on and on. Now, I took my job pretty serious, so it didn't really ever come into play. You know, I don't know that up through my flying career now, I always got into the books. I studied very hard and heavy, and so I always knew my job, and so that kind of just let it put me on an equal playing field, I guess. I grew up when I was a deer hunter, and just I had a good physical basis. I was pretty active as a kid, hunting and hiking. That really kind of helped me be able to handle the stress of what was going to be happening and the running and all that and everything. I was in track. I did some basketball, some wrestling. And so when I got to basic, I had a pretty good working physical basis that I was able to get through a lot easier than some of the guys. Like, we did have a guy with a heart attack while we were running the one time, you know, so like there, it was definitely hot. I would say Texas towards the end of basic was very hot, and if I hadn't have hunted and hiked hills as much as I did, I think I would have had a lot more trouble. I started Barksdale, Louisiana. I did a little time in Loring, Maine. After Louisiana, I was 3 years there. I went to Los Angeles with the reserve, worked on the C-17s, KC-135. Then I got out for a year, came back here, and then joined the Alaska Army Guard and went to Black Hawk School and became a Black Hawk guy here in this state, and deployed Kosovo twice, Guatemala, Iraq. I've pretty much been every country from Saudi Arabia to Ireland and Europe. And just I spent time in Germany, in Mannheim. I volunteered. I was a National Guardsman, but I volunteered to go places all the time. I really loved the travel. And it, to me, to just work somewhere in another country was just awesome to me. I lost count around a dozen of trips to Germany. I don't know how many times I've been there anymore. I've been so many, and mostly through the military. I've only traveled once to Germany on my own, but the rest of it was always through the military. You fly into Kuwait, and you get all set up. It is very hot. There's a tension, you know, overlying, and you load up, and there's that moment. You know, you do some training there, and you fly over the border, and you're in Iraq. It was definitely an experience like you'll never forget, like the feeling and just seeing things. And, you know, all of a sudden the world around you changes fairly quickly because it's a dangerous it can get. It's just all around you. I was in the Mosul area, Tal Afar, and just outside of Mosul, we had the VIP complex. But it was pretty much Mosul for my entire tour for Iraq, mostly in the north. We did head down south a few times, like to Baghdad, and a few times to Rawa on the border with Syria. We had our Sunday mission. We supplied Marines out there, mostly in the Mosul area, though. For the VIP, we stayed in Uday Kusey, Saddam's son's palace. So we stayed there. After they took it over, the 101st, we turned it into our VIP area, and we flew our missions out of there. And it was Thanksgiving, Christmas time frame. Had the big five-ship mission, and Rumsfeld was there, and Condoleezza Rice, and got to VIP them. Got a hug from Rumsfeld on Thanksgiving, I think it was. But it was definitely where the 101st was in charge of the whole war zone, that area. And so we had everything kind of pretty much happening out of there. I've been a flight crew chief. In the Air Force, they call them flight engineers. In the Army, we call them crew chief. But basically, door gunner, mechanic. But I was also an instructor. I taught door gunnery. This is the 16th year that I do not have to teach gunnery. So 15 years, I stood units up and took them into war zones. And this is the first year that I haven't had to do it, which is the 16th. So 15 years, I was the main door gunner instructor for our unit. Door gunnery is important because it's a skill that's going to help keep you alive. So like safety and the aviation aspect of all of it, I always taught, you know, don't cut corners and, you know, do your aircraft maintenance right, which, speaking of aircraft maintenance, there's a good group of workers that have a high ethic background and, you know, they want to do the job the right time. So I taught it, but also a door gunnery, it's important to know, you know, I mean, you're in that zone, that's your safety. So, having our guns up and going and having them able to keep them going was important to me. And so that's why I focused on that as an enlisted man. It was, you know, your pilots are doing their thing, and they're the professionals that are doing that, and you need to be taking up your portion, and you need to be doing the best you can on your assigned job. So I took it pretty seriously. We were actually an easy company from the Band of Brothers. It was a disbanded unit after World War II, famous show, very good show, but they stood it back up, E Company, for Iraq and our unit. And so I was actually a part of the Band of Brothers. We called ourselves Task Force Bob. Band of Brothers says they stood them back up for Iraq. So I was very proud to be in that unit. Yeah, just getting up and going to breakfast. All of a sudden you hear a huge ba-boom, louder than normal. And you're going, oh, what was that? That was something close, you know. And then you sit down to have breakfast because you're reporting to work and you have to go get your aircraft ready for your day's missions. And then it pops up on the news that one of the top Al-Qaeda guys just outside of Tal Afar may have been wounded. And you just go, oh, wow. You know, like it's right now. Like it's like it was Al-Zarqawi. And I was getting up to go have some food. I don't remember what meal it was. But the big boom, what was that? Sitting down, then it came across the news. They might have got it Zarqawi. And turns out they didn't quite get him. But, you know, but then you see the special forces guys there showing up at the chow hall too, and you're just like, wow, I'm here. This is happening. He was the Lion of the Desert. He was because they had the different aspects of Taliban, and Zarqawi was an offshoot of I would say Muslim radical groups, but he took off on his own and they called him Lion of the Desert, and he was in Iraq and he kind of moved from Afghanistan over there, so he was their main target in that part of the world for the very scary man. But when we were in Iraq too, like we try to bring a human aspect to it, so we would throw soccer balls and stuffed animals out to the kids, and I just thought to, like I don't play soccer, but everybody else in the world does. So we gave soccer balls out, and they appreciated it, but it was us trying to show, hey, we're not bad, like we're here, we're helping. And so we would land and hand out stuffed animals. We didn't quite do the candy. Guys would throw candy out, but then you'd get so many kids running at your stuff. We didn't kind of think that was safe, so we more or less tossed animals out or handed them out when we were on the ground, which kind of kept the crowds under control a little bit. First couple times, guys threw candy out to kids, and they just said, "Oh, I got overwhelmed." We just would pretty much every so often, like you'd see kids in a field playing, and I would just throw a soccer ball out to them. I lost count of how many Army Achievement Medals, AAMs, and all those I've got. I did receive one in Iraq as an air medal, and it was very, that's my favorite, the air medal I got in Iraq, just short of 750 flight hours. And they're harder to get. Like you had to get at least 50 hours in, but I made way over that, and I just, that one meant a lot to me when they handed it to me. That was my prize. I took on a big portion of the flight hours. And so it was like, get up, get some food in you, get the aircraft ready, get your guns on, go flying, go home, eat, check your emails, go lay down, go to sleep. And then I would go to the gym, I'd lift the day, take a day off, run. So I stayed active in the gym, and that kind of helped me get through it all, kind of having a routine. With the 101st, we had the generals there, and so they had different shifts, and one shift was Nepal, which made excellent food. Then they had a Filipino shift, which they'd have the whole lumpia, pancit, and all that. And then they had every Sunday we would have steaks. So, like being on VIP with the general, like you were going to eat good. I even had a, we would occasionally get the king crab legs, which I cannot believe. That was something when you go in and see that. But just being on the VIP, we would even flying out to some to the Iran border, up into Turkey and everything. We got to try their food, and I really liked it, the different breads and the veal. And then like we even go into the Korean camp they had up in the north. The food was just excellent. We always ate good during the deployments, even Kosovo the first time. Definitely got some white hair. We had some riots in Kosovo when we lost control of the country, and it's just stress when all of a sudden you're hearing AKs going off and things kabooming around you. It's like, whoa, it's just definitely a man, I'm in it now kind of feeling. But I definitely blood pressure took a hit, and definitely got white hair from the whole experience. I had a nice comb over before I started deploying, and I started losing my hair. I carry coins. I carry Russian Orthodox cross. Always would. I carried pictures of family, and but mainly was the Orthodox cross. Everywhere I went, being able to see a raven was made me feel comfortable. Like I'd go to Kosovo. That whole history is of blackbirds and that whole valley, and I would see a blackbird somewhere. Even wherever I was in the world, and I'd see a bird that was related to the crow or the raven, and I'd feel better. In Iraq, I didn't see any for a long time, and I just was like, oof, that's kind of, it started to kind of bug me. And then one day I saw one, I just felt a lot better. It was like, whew. Definitely had a couple times where the blackbird would land above me on top of my place where I was staying and caw at me really loud, and so I just kind of felt good. Like I did weightlifting and would grapple when I could, but it was always hard to find training partners. But I weightlifted and ran before, before the injuries of my ankle and different things. But I mostly weightlifted. Ted Nugent was there. I've seen him a couple different times. He came, Toby Keith. But Ted Nugent, I've had a couple times. I shook his hand in Kosovo, and he stayed. All the Toby Keith and all the other guys left, and he stayed around for about another week. And then I went to Iraq, and I heard he was playing somewhere else, and I didn't get a chance to see him. And then I had my chance for 2 weeks to leave. I landed in Seattle, and we had to fly in uniform. And he walked up, tapped me on the shoulder, and just said, "Hey, thanks for your service." And I went, "Hey, Mr. Nugent." And I said, "Thanks for all the good music. And I saw you in Kosovo." And he goes, "You were there?" And he said, "Yep." And he shook my hand. And Randy Couture, MMA guy, was there. I got a chance to shake his hand. I barely caught him. I have a friend that trained with him, and I just went in and said, "My friend Dan said to say hello to you." And he looked at me and said, "What?" And we shook hands and talked, and that was cool. And then I left Iraq. My brother sent me an email 2 days later and said, "You won't believe who I saw." And I didn't think much of it because I was coming out of Iraq. And I landed and finally got back here. And he said, "I sat next to Randy Couture on Alaska Airlines flight. Here's a signed card." And I said, "I just shook his hand 2 days ago." I tried to go to Germany. I tried to go see a European country. But my leave got messed up. I had to come home. And when I got here, I just sat back in the chair and slept, fell asleep for like 12 hours. Woke up sitting in the chair and then, whoa. But then I ended up sleeping quite a bit. And then, because we had to go right back in. I was always doing things to make people laugh. So I'd have crazy stories on how I always would do stuff to be crazy and have fun. And I just definitely tried to get all my friends laughing. So we were always up to something. We weren't doing anything bad, but we were having fun and always doing stuff to laugh, playing tricks on each other, and definitely laughed a lot with our friends. I had a good time. So I was always creating stories and always doing things to get my friends laughing. There are still some good friends from the Air Force, mostly through Facebook and Messenger, and then they call a couple of my friends to call me. It's coming. It's still like the first time. It was the Air Force. I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I just moved to Texas after Louisiana. And I got a job at McDonnell Douglas Aircraft Manufacturing Plant in L.A. And then moved to make C-17s. And just the first day, you know, they say, re-up or get out. And so I said, well, I'm not going to re-up. So 90 days later, I'm driving off the base and no longer in the military. That's a very odd feeling just because when you don't have a job and you just drive off, you're going, $500, I can get it. I can get some gas and some food. Now what am I going to do? I really did enjoy like Kosovo, the Balkans, and I really connected with the Balkan service in Bulgaria because it's the same church as the Russian Orthodox in Serbia and Bulgaria. And the Greek, especially the Greek soldiers, like we'd go to Greek camp, like every Sunday they'd let us go to their services, and just felt very connected through the Orthodox Church. And it was very good to get to the countries and had some very good experiences through Greece and Bulgaria, but all through the Serb Church and all that. It was very good seeing the original one and talking to the different. We did a big tour of the first Serb Church, and these Serbian monks were like 6'4". They were humongous guys, big beards. And if you can picture Rasputin, that's what they look like. But I was given a tour to one of the guys, you know, like, what's the cross mean? And I explained it to him. And who's that? That's, you know, that's Michael, Archangel Michael. And I was giving a tour. And then one of my friends was off giving another tour, but he was Orthodox. He was Oriental Orthodox, and I was Russian Orthodox. But we were giving a tour, and these monks later just came up and said, "Excuse me, are you Orthodox?" I said, "Yes, from Alaska." And then he said, "Follow me." And all of a sudden, my buddy, they went and got him also, and we're like, "What's going on?" But they picked us out of the crowd and took us to the side and said, "Come with us." And they went to this building, and we climbed the stairs. It was a nice wood building. Went in, there's a picture of the Romanov family, and I said, "Wow, the Romanovs, okay." And they sat down and started pouring shots for us. And they said, "You know, welcome to your place, because you're Orthodox too. Welcome." And then the chaplain walked in and said, "Hey, you guys aren't drinking alcohol, are you?" He said, "No, it's tea." And he said, "Oh, okay. You want some? Would you like some, sir?" And he said, "No, I've had too much caffeine for the day," and left. And then we sat and drank with the monks in Kosovo. So that was something. It's always a hard thing. Like, you know, we have two factions of our government, and it's going to be, you know, during the Democrat years, it's going to be lean. During Republican years, it's going to be heavy. You know, like with George W., we get a lot of money, and all of a sudden you have all kinds of things. In the Clinton years, we barely had soap enough to clean floors. So it was like a roller coaster. It was feast or famine, but it doesn't deter you from doing your job, and you don't let it bother you to a point where you look at it that way. I was proud to serve with my friends. We took it, you know, it was a very important thing to do. It is a tough thing to have to do, you know, but I really respect all the guys that step up to do it because it's tougher than a lot of people realize, and it is an honorable thing to do. I appreciate everybody that served in the military, and I know it's tough for like some of the natives. We have a lot of service and a lot of warrior type people, and respect what they did, and it's a calling and it's a fear you overcome. And I think that our guys are more prepared for that type of life because they would step up for their family. And I appreciate all that they've done for our country. And there's been many family members that have passed during wars, through the different wars. So, you know, it's all tough. It's all loss. You know, it's a hard thing to do. And when you lose family members, it's especially tough if you're not 100% backing or liking what's going on. You know, but the fact that they stepped up and serve their country honorably is it's the ultimate sacrifice.